This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
We're recording just after the close, Friday, May 6th. The real Pizza Friday today, and want to wish happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. I know Diana, who's listening in from compliance to keep us in line, is a mother. So happy Mother's Day to Diana, and obviously my mom and your mom, Sam, and my wife. So happy Mother's Day to all the other mothers out there.
Happy Mother's Day, everyone.
Well, it was a kind of a crazy week in markets. As we said, you know, people could have got Willy whipsawed. So let me go over to where we are.
Yeah, Willy whipsaw was all around. It looks like in both the fixed income markets and the equity markets. But on the S&P 500, it's closed the week down 20 basis points, down 13% on the year. The bookends to the weekly returns: energy up over 10% and real estate on the other side down just 3.75%. And looking at growth versus value, value once again outperforming, up around, let's call it 0.75 point, and growth down about 1.5% on the week. Moving over to fixed income, there was definitely some willy whipsawing going on around the FOMC meeting. The day of, and then especially the day after, as I guess the same thing that we saw in the equity markets that were up and down. It was definitely a roller coaster there. But the 2-year Treasury yield ended up 1 basis point higher at 273 to close the week here. And the 10-year Treasury is up 19 basis points to close at 313. And the bond is up 22 basis points to close the week at 322. Looking at the yield curves as well, we closed last Friday with a spread between the 10-year yield and the 2-year yield of 21 basis points. This week, it's up 19 basis points to close the week at 40, a spread of 40 there. So definitely some bear steepening there on the twos, tens at least.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see, you know, I think when we were looking at the 10-year last week, and it was like 293, we're like, starting to maybe see a little bit of resistance at that 3 handle, or, you know, a 3% exactly. Was it going to break through? Was it going to break through, you know, and kind of come back, or, you know, we get a couple of days, you know, like a 303 or something, but a decisive breakthrough to 313. And we haven't been, I just pulled up the chart, we haven't been at this level since the infamous Powell pivot in the fourth quarter of 2018.
Yeah, that was in back in November, I think, is the last time we broke over that 3, as you mentioned there. So on Wednesday, when, as Powell was speaking, and just some, you know, won't front run it too much, but we saw the 2-year kind of reprice the expected moves there. It was dropped on an intraday basis. It looks like right here in the range of 25 basis points was the move. But on Wednesday, it did close 15 basis points lower on the yield than it started the day at. So definitely some swings during the day. And, you know, we're seeing it here impacting the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate down over 1% week to date. And, you know, looking at right now, the ag is down over 10%. I think this is the first time we've talked about it being over a double digit type of down year for the ag. We got into the nines, and I think this is the first time we've crossed through the tens in terms of us talking about it on a Friday close.
It's pretty funny. You talked about the 2-year in a 25 basis point range. wasn't that long ago that the 2 year was trading at 25 basis points.
That's right. That's right. Now that's just one day's move. Looking across the various sectors here, most of the pain within the fixed income market, once again, given the moves in the treasury market, was in the longer duration sector of the IG corporate credit space here. It's down about 1.4% on the week-to-date basis. Even bank loans, which I have the floating rate component, suffered a down week of about 1% down on the week, and now it's down over about 2.5%, let's call it, on the year-to-date basis. But flipping back to IG corporate credits, while it's down a whopping almost, it's over 15%, let's just say, that's a round down actually for this one. It's down over 15% on a year-to-date basis. So definitely a brutal year for many sectors of the fixed, for all sectors, it looks like, of the fixed income market. But in particular, IG corporate credit is really suffering from having that longer or that higher interest rate sensitivity to rate moves there.
It doesn't seem like this year the sell in May and go away is really going to work itself out, or going to work out when you're a 60-40 portfolio. If you rebalance at the beginning of the year, you're down 12%, if you're just S&P in the ag. So you might as well hold on and hope to eke out a little more positivity over the rest of the year.
Yeah, I guess it's just a view on whether and then you either lock it in or perhaps save yourself from some more pain, or you lock it in and miss the recovery, right? So it's always kind of the which side of the coin you're on when it comes to that. But just a lot of times it's just about saving people from themselves, right? The time that you actually want to hit that sell button is right when you're capitulating, and then it does seem like the market can recover from that point. At least it feels like that when I think about my personal trading accounts there. But so I always try to temper my own behavior and emotional biases there.
Yeah, as we were talking about earlier today, Sam, no itchy trigger fingers.
That's right, in all manners.
That's right.
So moving over to what did work this week, it's a little bit of a familiar theme again, is the Bloomberg Commodity Index, a broad basket of commodities. There is up week to date 69 basis points. Year to date, it's up almost 32%. So still hanging in there. It's it is the one sector here, or the one index on the broad sector of asset classes that we talk about that did end the week positive, and thus far, I guess, on the year as well. So looking at that, WTI crude oil, again, pushing over that $110 a barrel of WTI crude. That's up on the back of a 5.5% week, up over 46% on the front month futures contract for the year to date. So energy continues to drive a lot of this outperformance in the commodity baskets. But I'm looking at across the board, it looks like agriculture, especially the grains, are also having a very strong year as well as a strong week. So that broad basket of diversified commodities is definitely helping out the portfolios for those that hold it. And then looking at Bitcoin, it continues to suffer and languish here, but it's below 36,000 today, and it's down almost 7% on the week and down 22% for the year to date.
That's pretty brutal for Bitcoin being down. We were talking earlier, Sam, pretty surprised given the volatility and kind of the moves in the stock market over the past 2 days. You would have expected, markets in turmoil, you see those headlines on TV. But when you look at S&P down 20 bips or 25 bips on the week, it doesn't really seem that you're looking at the markets in turmoil, but maybe they're looking at Bitcoin down 7% when stocks are only down 20 bips. Not a good, we always use it as a risk indicator, a risk sentiment indicator. It doesn't bode well, I think, maybe for, stock markets.
Yeah, and I guess it's one of those things as Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in general just being a very young asset, I guess if we could call it, assign the word asset to it, it's still trying to figure out what hat it wants to wear. And yeah, we've heard the various narratives, and sometimes those narratives conflict, but right now it doesn't seem to be working as an inflation-based asset, doesn't seem to be working as a gold type of digital gold replacement. It's definitely acting like a risk asset, though, I suppose, when we look at it in this context.
Yeah, but gold is down 1.5% this week, so it's not doing too well either.
I look at that. It's still positive, hanging on to that positive, but it just, like the tractor beam that Mark Kimbrough likes to talk about at 1900, it just seems to just keep bumping along that level.
So maybe it's a store of value at 1900.
That's right. That's right. So with that, do you want to kick us off on what happened in the past week in macro land?
Yeah, it was a pretty busy week in macro land. On Monday, we did get the ISM, ISM manufacturing number for April. Came in at 55.4, but well below the estimates of 57.6. It was the lowest print since July of 2020 and the second consecutive month of declining prints, but they're still above 50. So 23rd consecutive month of above 50, so expansionary. On Tuesday, we got the JOLTS job openings for March. That number came in at 11.55 million or so, call it. Beat to the upside. I think, this is something that we'll get into a little bit later, because Chair Powell talked about not this necessarily this number, but a kind of a ratio. So we'll talk about that shortly. On Wednesday, we got ISM services for April, came in at 57.1, below the 58.5 estimate, kind of a similar story to the manufacturing number. And then, of course, the big event of the week was the Fed on Wednesday, and we'll cover that in our topic of the week as usual. And then today, the real pizza Friday, we got the non-farm payroll number coming in at 428,000, beat the 380,000 estimate. So that's good for the labor market. U3 unemployment was flat at 3.6%, was expected to actually be come down to 3.5. So it ticked up a little bit higher than expected, but still at reasonably low levels. The U6 underemployment rate came in at, it actually ticked up again to 7.0% from 6.9% last month. And then kind of surprisingly, the labor force participation rate decreased from 62.4 to 62.2, where that number was expected to rise to 62.5. So that was the big surprise of the day.
Yeah, I kind of dug into it a little bit. Probably deserves a little bit more digging, but what I saw was generally, it looks like the big part that drove the labor force change was a drop in the employed bucket. But what's unusual here is that typically when you see a drop in the number of employed, it tends to roll into that unemployed bucket. This time around, it seems like that drop in the number of employed actually just went directly, bypassed the unemployed bucket and went straight into the exiting the labor force bucket. So they kind of bypassed, the potential for filing some of those unemployment checks. But I guess what that suggests to me, at least at this cursory look through, is that perhaps people left their jobs voluntarily, either through planned retirement or just saying, the old saying, I quit, take this job and shove it maneuver. So perhaps, they're looking to transition jobs or they're looking to retire. But it was a little bit interesting to me that we didn't really see a pickup in unemployment, despite the drop in employment. In fact, it was the other way around, bro, where you actually had a slight decline in the unemployment as well. So it kind of points to me that people perhaps were just leaving the labor force from their job voluntarily.
Yeah, that's interesting to see that or to think about it. I guess on the margin, you could see some people doing that, but to have a bigger effect, to have a lot of people do that is pretty surprising, at least to me.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the, as we're talking about, there is this other index out there. I can't remember which agency puts it out, but there's that quits rate as well. So perhaps next time around, we'll dig around into the quits rate and see if that's actually been on the rise, which I suspect that it has.
Yeah, that would make sense. What do you want to get into the topic of the week?
Yeah, so as we talked about the topic of the weekend, as we know, long-term listeners know that on the back of each Wednesday FOMC meeting, Jeff and I highlight the some of the key points that we took away from both the prepared remarks as well as the presser that Powell has in terms of what actually transpired before the prepared remarks were announced was that the Fed did raise the federal funds target rate from by 50 basis points. So now the range for the federal funds rate now is 75 basis points to 1% on the upper bound. And then in terms of the color around the reduction of the balance sheet through quantitative tightening, They did say that they were both that they were going to start reducing the holdings of both treasuries and agency debt, as well as agency mortgage-backed securities, on June 1st, 2022, as well as the schedule of that release, first going about half of the amount that they initially had suggested. So $30 billion per month on the treasury holdings, and 17 and a half on the agency MBS. And then the next round would be double that amount to get to that kind of that high level of the 95 billion per month across both holdings as the cap. But Jeff, you did quite a bit of work here on kind of pouring through the transcripts and the prepared remarks, as well as the Q&A. Do you want to just go through some things that caught your eye?
Yeah, it's as I think from a high level, you know, Greg Whiteley, our government portfolio manager, said that the meeting went as expected, given the market's reactions, both on the bond side and on the stock side. I don't think the market had the same expectations going into the meeting as he did. One other thing I would like to point out is that the vote to raise the rate to by 50 basis points was a unanimous vote. So if you remember last meeting, there was one vote, and I don't remember who it was. It was probably Bullard, if they make that public, but or if he made it public, but he wanted to raise it 50, but they only raised it 25. So this time everyone voted to raise it 50, even though Bullard had been the one floating out the idea of raising it by 75 basis points. So kind of a unanimous in line. Powell got everyone in line for that 50 basis point rate hike. I think from the prepared remarks, it was interesting to see that Chair Powell opened it up by speaking directly. He said, "I'm going to speak directly to the American people. Inflation is much too high, and we understand the hardship it is causing, and we're moving expeditiously to bring it back down." So that just highlighted, here's the first thing we're going to do. It's we're bringing inflation back down. That's our number one priority now. He also said the labor market's extremely tight. Inflation is much too high. Kind of interestingly, or not interestingly, but more, you know, kind of reiterating the idea that supply disruptions or the disruptions to the supply chain have been larger and longer lasting than even the Fed anticipated, and that price pressures have spread to a broader range of goods and services, and that this is kind of what the stock market and the bond market reacted to on Wednesday when he said that there's a broad sense on the committee that additional 50 basis point increases should be on the table at the next couple of meetings, end quote. And so the market had priced in, depending on which metric you use, whether you use the CME Fed Watch or the WERP screen on Bloomberg, anywhere from, you know, a few percentage points to up to 50% of a probability of a 75 basis point rate hike at the June meeting. So that for Chair Powell to come out and say, you're not going to get 75, you're only going to get 50 for the next couple of meetings, so June and July, the market felt that was a little bit more dovish than they were anticipating. So that's kind of why we kind of got the rally in the stock market on Wednesday. From the balance sheet decrease, that Sam, as you said, it goes from 30 billion a month for 3 months starting June 1st. So then September 1st, it goes to 60 billion a month. That's in treasuries. That's going to be in treasury coupon securities. And if there's not enough coupon securities that are maturing each month, they're going to sell some T-bill, or they won't sell, they'll let T-bills mature. From the agency side of things, and this was kind of a question mark that our agency team had going into the meeting, we knew the cap in, you know, after the cap at the end would be 35 billion. They are starting at half of that, 17 billion per month for the first 3 months. The question was whether that was going to be a target or a cap. And Vitaly, our agency MBS portfolio manager, was relieved to see that they were caps and not targets, and that they do say in the statement that at the current level of mortgage rates, the actual pace of agency MBS runoff would likely be less than this monthly cap amount. So no active selling, at least on the agency mortgage side, at least thus far. We'll see if prepayments remain slow and the Fed does want to reduce their agency MBS holdings. They might have to resort to some active selling, but at least not at this stage, as the Fed is still allowed to be nimble. And, I guess the one thing that Greg Whiteley said was different was that he expected it to be a three-step process So go from, you know, one third to two thirds to the cap, but instead the Fed is just doing a 50% to 100% over 3 months. So it's going to be a pretty fast move there for the Fed to get to their targets. And then Chair Powell kind of closed out the prepared remarks by saying the American economy is very strong and well positioned to handle tighter monetary policy. And that flows through to the rest of the Q&A. And the Q&A tends to be kind of disjointed, and it depends on, you know, the different reporters ask different types of questions. So I tried to kind of put them into some broad categories. If we kind of focus on the labor market first, that Chair Powell said that 3.6% unemployment is just about as low as it's been in 50 years, that the wages are running high, the highest they've run in quite some time. And they are one good example or good illustration really of how tight the labor market really is. The good thing is Chair Powell did say that they don't see a wage price spiral. So we're not into that idea of rising wages leading to rising prices, leading to rising wages again. So we're not in that price spiral yet. And then he kind of said something that we've been thinking, and something that Sam, you and I talked about in the Channel 11 video interview we did last week, where that the Fed's tools don't work on supply shocks. The Fed's tools work on demand. And Chair Powell said there's a job to do on demand. And you can see it in the labor market where demand is substantially in excess of supply of workers. And so, you know, one of the ways that we look at this, or one of the ways the Fed looks at this, is the vacancy to unemployment ratio, is what Chair Powell called it. You know, if you look at the JOLTS data, that's the job opening. So that's the vacancies. Look at the number of unemployed, that's the ratio. That ratio today is around 1.9 from the JOLTS data we received earlier in the week. And so one of the reporters asked Chair Powell what number do they want to get to, because Chair Powell pointed to that number 1.9 being very high. What number do they want to get to? And Chair Powell said, in terms of vacancy to unemployment ratio, we don't have a goal in mind. There's no specific number that we're saying we got to get to. It's really, you've got to get to a place where the labor market appears to be more in balance. And he kind of followed that on with, I think that when we get to a 1-to-1 ratio in the late teens, we thought that was a pretty good number. So he's looking, you know, maybe not to get to that 1-to-1, but certainly not as high as the 1.9, or I think it was like a 1.4 earlier in the year or late last year. So they really want to get to that. He's not saying they want to get to 1.1, but they want to get to 1.1. If we talk about recession a little bit, the first question is from the Wall Street Journal. And he asked, what's your level of confidence that you can slow hiring without pushing the economy into a downturn? So he didn't say, you know, causing a recession, but, you know, push the economy into a downturn. And Chair Powell said, there's a path which we would be able to have demand moderate in the labor market and have vacancies come down without unemployment going up. There are 1.9 vacancies for every unemployed person, 11.5 million vacancies, 6 million unemployed. Then he kind of followed it up with, I would say, I think we have a good chance to have a soft or softish landing or outcome. So, you know, it was interesting for him to say we could have a soft landing, you know, the Fed could thread the needle, but for him to kind of hedge it a little bit and say a softish landing was something that the Twitter sphere jumped upon pretty quickly there. And, you know, but Chair Powell did say later on in the Q&A that it's a strong economy and nothing about it suggests that it's close or vulnerable to a recession. So the Fed, as is typical, they don't think a recession is coming. And so that they're going to continue with their rate hikes. And so the second question out there was from a reporter who asked if a 75 or even a 75 basis point or even a 1 percentage point increase in the Fed funds rate possible. And Chair Powell said, so 75 basis point increase is not something the committee is actively considering. And so that was really, I put on the notes, that was the rally monkey in the stock market, and stocks really took off from there because they were thinking 75 was gonna happen or a decent probability of it happening. And Chair Powell walked that back. Certainly the Fed does seem to see some evidence that the inflation is peaking or flattening out. And so they want to make progress there. You know, I think I thought it was funny that Chair Powell was, you know, did say, it wasn't directly talking about the dot plot or the SEP. He said, it's a very difficult environment to try to give forward guidance 60, 90 days in advance. There's so many things that can happen in the economy and around the world. So he's really saying, I know our dots are behind the curve. You know, Fed looked like it was behind the curve. The dots are saying we weren't going to raise rates that quickly, but ignore them because things have been changing so fast that the dots are really ancient history, even though we just got got them in March. Chair Powell did talk a lot about the, whether the Fed would raise rates above the neutral rate, the neutral rate being the rate that is neither pushes economic activity higher nor slows it down. So that's in the neutral side of things. They did talk about whether the Fed would raise rates, and Chair Powell said a few times that they would not hesitate to raise rates above neutral to get inflation under control. So that was really, because he repeated it often enough, that kind of hammered in the point that the Fed is going to be very aggressive in raising rates, and they're not really going to be worried about the recession too much. And then really, when you talk about, there was a question, I think, that asked him about the Fed, if the Fed has lost credibility. And of course, the Fed, he's going to say the Fed hasn't, but he really did, as an illustration, he said, quote, monetary policy is working through expectations now to a very large extent. We've only done 2 rate increases, but if you look at financial conditions, the 2 years at 280 now. In September, I think it was at 20 basis points. And that's all through the economy. People were feeling those higher rates already. So really financial conditions have been tightening because of the forward expectations of the Fed raising interest rates. And then I guess the one question on inflation, if we kind of move over to the inflation side of things a little bit, back to inflation. One of the reporters asked a really good question that said, does getting back down to your 2% mandate require that the supply chain issues get resolved, since you can only handle the demand side, as you said, or will you have to crimp demand maybe even further if the supply chain issues don't resolve themselves in order to try to get inflation back down to where you want it to be? And, typical, from when you get a good question like this, really laying out a either or type question, Powell kind of just said, we're focused on doing the job that we need to do on demand, and there's plenty to be done there. So he kind of didn't really answer the question, but I think that the question itself was a very good question and something that was, I wanted to highlight there. I guess the last thing is that, Sam, as you talked about the balance sheet, when someone asked him, why did you pick June 1st to be the start date? They could have said today, any day between, May 4th when the meeting was and June 1st, and they chose June 1st. And Powell said, so why June 1st? It was just pick a date. It was nothing magic about it. It's not going to have any macroeconomic significance over time. Sometimes we publish these calendars on the first day of the month, and that's what we're doing. So it just seemed convenient. Wait 4 weeks, give the market time to digest, the balance sheet unwind, start on the first calendar day of the month, and go from there. But also I thought it was interesting that, you've seen, there's been lots of estimates of how much the balance sheet unwind would equate to a rate increase. And Chair Powell said, this will be taken probably too seriously, but sort of 0.25%, one rate increase over the course of the year at this pace, which I think, Sam, we saw that. So that's saying $1 trillion a year in balance sheet unwind is equal to 0.25 point, 25 basis point rate hike. I think we've seen estimates that it's like 3 rate hikes or 75 basis points estimate in terms of tightening. But the 25 basis points seems seriously under kind of valuing that quantitative tightening side of things.
Yeah, I guess if there's any ambiguity, I mean, Powell was actually, he was much more clear in a number of the terminology that he used, and just, kind of, I don't want to use the word targets, but how they're thinking about the path of policy. And I guess if there's one point of ambiguity, would be around this kind of, this estimate of what the impact would be felt via balance sheet reduction, trying to equate that to rate hikes. So I guess that was that one point there.
Yeah.
We'll probably just debate that, continue to debate it. It's been a source of contention, across different sell side shops, and also internally a double line on the equivalence of between balance sheet reduction and the implication for rate hikes.
That's right.
Or not implication, but the equivalent of rate hikes.
Yep. I thought it was interesting. I threw a couple of miscellaneous quotes in here that I thought were funny. Powell did say, we don't have precision surgical tools. we have essentially interest rates, the balance sheet, and forward guidance. So he kind of laid out, this is all they got. It, you know, they can cut rates or raise rates, they can reduce or increase the balance sheet, and then they can tell people what they're going to do. So those are the three tools.
The tough thing with that too, just leading to the lack of precision, is that the Fed monetary policy is always somewhat lagged, and the impact is always a bit lagged in not only the economy, but also when that economic data is actually eventually released, right? So they're kind of operating in real time on lagged data.
That's right. And with blunt tools. So it's not an ideal scenario, but yeah. It's the best we got. One of the questions was, I think it was like economists say that there's a chance of a recession, and what do you think? And Powell's response was, our job is not to rate the chances, it is to try to achieve it. And I was like, yeah, that's good. I like that one. And then finally, someone asked about fiscal policy and how that has contributed to inflation. What would you tell the fiscal side of things? And he replied back, when we get inflation back under control, then maybe I can, give other people advice.
Yeah, there were a couple of zingers in there. I mean, he's almost should be a comedian in terms of his moonlighting job here.
I guess, comedian for a Fed, Fed chairperson, we're following, at least for us, we're following the press conference, listening to it live, and I was taking notes and I read the transcript. So at least for me, I was happy to get a little comedy out of it.
Yeah, anytime you read something from the Fed and you get a little bit of a smile, then I think it's a positive for the levity side of things, right? But Jeff, that was an incredibly thorough roundup of the FOMC. Appreciate that, and hopefully our listeners got something out of it. I certainly did. So thanks for that again. In terms of things to keep an eye on for next week, it's pretty light in terms of quantity, but quality, it seems like we'll have some good data points coming out. On Wednesday, we have the CPI coming out for April. It's expected to fall on a month-to-month basis and a year-over-year basis. So on month-to-month, the headline is expected to fall to 20 basis points, to 0.2%, down from 1.2% the previous month, but still positive there. Core CPI is expected to increase on the other side to up 40 basis points. Headline CPI is expected to come down to 8.1, down from this four-decade high that we've seen at 8.5% the previous month. And then core year-over-year CPI is expected to drop to 6%, down from 6.5%.
6% seems significantly lower than 6.5%, just like looking at it, like 6.5% on the upward trend or flattening. Now we're down to 6%. That seems like a maybe it's some effect from the Fed raising rates.
Yeah, it's a pretty rapid move in one period, but these things can be pretty volatile as well. So we'll continue to monitor that and see how much of an impact the war in Ukraine does to offset kind of that impact of the Fed there. And then on Thursday we get PPI. It's expected to be a positive 50 basis points on the headline. That is on a month-over-month basis. That is down from the previous month of 1.4% month-over-month as well. Core is expected to drop to 0.6% month-over-month, down from 1% the period prior to this. And if this comes to fruition, then that would bring the year-over-year PPI headline to 10.7%. And 8.9% on core. And as I'm looking at it here, I believe, both of those are going to be slowdowns in the year-over-year numbers for both headline and core as well.
Yeah, but still very high level. Very high levels.
So very high. And it's always funny that these kind of, the PPI comes after the CPI, as we tend to think about PPI as kind of an input into CPI, depending on whether or not the prices paid by producers can be passed on to the prices paid by consumers.
That's right. Well, I think this was a good episode, Sam. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening to us today, Monday Morning Mints. We did get an email last week asking if we could release the Monday Morning Minutes prior to the Monday bell on Monday. I don't know if that makes sense the way I said it, but just wanted to let listeners know that we do release it. We try to release it every Friday afternoon, shortly after we're done recording. That's why on some of these holiday weeks, we do try to record a little bit earlier to give the people in doing the work on the production side to get it out and have a, getting out on Friday on a reasonable hour as well. So with that in mind, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss that episode. And then you do get the notification on when it does drop. And again, we do aim to try these get these out late afternoon on Fridays. So you can pick up each episode Monday before the bell or Friday if you're a subscriber, I suppose. And that's available on your favorite iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcast platforms there. If you have any other questions, comments, or suggestions, you can send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com or hit us up on the Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
And you can find more information about DoubleLine at our website, doubleline.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/doubleline capital, where you can see Sam and I talking with Ken Shinoda on our recent Channel 11 video show that dropped a couple days ago. And if you, I was a little bit quick on the finger, so I was able to pause one of the two portfolio managers that were on TV simultaneously today or this week. So if you weren't able to pause it and you want to rewatch those two episodes, you can watch both Jeffrey Gundlach and Ken Shinoda's recent TV appearances on our YouTube channel. They recorded on Wednesday post FOMC, so a prime time slot for both of them. And don't forget to subscribe to Sam's other podcast, The Sherman Show. You can follow Sam and Jeff Sherman on Twitter there at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great week.
Yeah, thanks everyone and good luck out there.
This audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by the listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person or a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Securities mentioned are not a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell. These securities were chosen based on their active overweights within the representative portfolio to explain portfolio positioning and the forward-looking view of the market that drives such positioning. For the preceding year, beginning August 24th, 2021, a list of all positions is available by request at media@doubleline.com. Equities may decline in value due to both real and perceived general market, economic, and industry conditions.